radio, and the internet.
TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. It's time at TalkZone for more world-changing leadership with Our Global Hope. Here again, your host, Dr. Henrik Mann.
If you're just joining us, I'm Dr. Henrik Mann, and we're back with our guest, Mr. Roland Peterson, Executive Director of the Telegraph Business District in Berkeley, California. And we've been discussing matters of business leadership in the city of Berkeley and how Berkeley has touched the thinking and been a thought leader with the rest of the world. I want to invite our listeners to find us on the web at www.ourglobalhope.com and to call in on our show at 1-888-463-6748. That's 1-888-GO-FOR-IT. Before the break, we were discussing matters of leadership and partnership between the Berkeley business community and the university. And now I want to switch gears again and move into some of the issues that you feel business in, faces in terms of market branding. Roland, you know that Berkeley has a reputation for a unique kind of left politics to play into the survival and health of business in Berkeley.
No question. Berkeley is a politically liberal city. The voting consistently shows that. The council consistently reflects that. I think that is really born out of the idealism that has been pervasive in Berkeley for many, many years. And that idealism often reflects itself in very liberal aspirations and very almost utopian views that in much of the world might be seen as unrealistic, but are avidly pursued here.
You know, it's interesting when you look at the history of America that it is both it's a mixture of both idealism and pragmatism, and that I don't think we could think of America without this strong storyline of liberalism. Would you agree?
Well, I would agree, because liberalism has definitely been one of those things that is at times dominant, and certainly even when it's not dominant, certainly frames a lot of the political discourse in this country.
And certainly with the ideology of the right side of the political spectrum and the ideology of the left side seems in some ways that you could say that it takes two to tango. It's the creative interchange of ideas and of philosophy that makes America a great nation.
I completely agree. And, you know, there have been a number of people that have commented that a divided government, referring not only to the separation of powers, but that if you have a Congress and a president who are of different parties, that that's when it tends to work best. You know, I would leave that to the political theoreticians to discuss in greater length, but I thought of it as a very interesting thought, because it certainly has been that we seem to more often go off the track when it's all conservative or all liberal.
Charlie, I know, Charlie, that you have a background with family that's been more on the liberal side, and you've appreciated a lot of conservative side of the political how do you put those two together?
Well, Thakkar, I'm a historian, and my first degree is in American history, and one of the things that has marked our nation is very rigorous and sometimes contentious discourse that frames compromise and sometimes creative solutions that wouldn't otherwise be framed. And let me give you a recent one that's been forgotten with all of the headlines of right or left. You know, Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich actually worked on some domestic policy, and the welfare-to-work policies that were implemented in the mid-90s in some locations have proven to be very, very helpful. And it was the pressure from Republicans and the pragmatism of President Clinton that produced much better economic policies. And I'm no fan of Bill Clinton or Newt Gingrich for a lot of different reasons, but there are a couple of workhorses and warhorses worked together to frame some things that actually had some positive results, and we can find that all through our history. When one side says to the other, on either end, you know, we won, you lost, you know, deal with it. You've missed the genius of our system.
Right. I would completely agree with that.
Well, Roland, you had the chance this morning to listen to one of President Obama's cabinet speakers, and undoubtedly there was both some significant discussion about business and also perhaps some discussion about President Obama receiving the Nobel Prize. And I know there's a lot in that that comment I'm just making, but do you have some comments about the meeting you had this morning, and maybe also on the backside of that reflection regarding President Obama winning the prize?
Well, actually, this morning there was no discussion about President Obama winning the Nobel Prize. I didn't know it at the time, and I guess no one else did at the time either. But as far as him winning the Nobel Prize, it's well, speaking only for myself, it's a great surprise. I was not expecting that, but I think it certainly reflects the aspirations and deep longings that the world has for peace. And you know, I can't point to any, and I don't think anyone else can point to any treaty or peace agreement or anything like that that President Obama has negotiated. But on the other hand, he has certainly articulated the wishes and the yearnings of people that have been in strife for some time.
Here you go, Charlie. What do you think?
Well, I have a reaction that I think is a little bit nuanced there. I certainly share Roland's reaction. I'm surprised because of the lack of accomplishment. Had there been another year or two in office, or at the end of a term, some kind of Middle Eastern accord, some kind of nuclear treaty, some kind of economic summit or agreement, I would be more sanguine. I'm a little more critical insofar as I think we're dealing with a political reality that I'm concerned is heavy on ideology and idealism, but very light on pragmatic ability to actually affect the changes that we need. I'm deeply concerned about economic policy right now. Again, regardless of one's political opinion about programs per se, deeply concerned about economic policy and deeply concerned about the positioning of the U.S. in the world. The positive thing we're seeing is an attempt to really do have some dialogue, attempt to be humble and listening, and those things can always be positive virtues. Negatively, we are in a very competitive global economic environment, and a committee in Western Europe that leans toward the political left, their assessment of the speeches and words is one thing. The global realities and the economic realities of American workers are quite another. So I'm not as sanguine. I'm not a fan of the current president, but I want to leave room for opportunity to grow and to learn, and I want to leave room for that discourse that out of the contentiousness can come some creativity.
We're also talking about different economic theory and different economic philosophy about how wealth is created. It seems that you have certain theories that kind of tend towards the right side of the spectrum and some that tend towards the left side. And Charlie, Roland, either one of you, as you think about this shift, do these kinds of shifts of different kinds of thinking come easy to any society, America or any other?
Well, I don't know about whether it comes easy, but I think that what we had with the crisis last fall and the meltdown on Wall Street is that people were looking desperately for action. And so they really were less concerned about ideology and somebody that would do something and, you know, fix this crisis because I'm about to lose my home. I'm about to have this, that, or the other thing happen. They see, you know, these companies going, you know, going up in flames, if you will. So I think that, the whole idea of economic theory and which one you're going to, as a society, are going to embrace is a luxury that can only be taken outside the situation of a crisis. I think when we were in a crisis mode, what the country was going to follow the president, basically.
Charlie,
no, I agree. I agree, and that's what occurred in the history of last fall. There's a certain artificiality to the crisis. There was going to be an adjustment in housing and an adjustment in speculative investment anyway, because of the nature of what was happening. One venture capitalist said that the banks, who were supposed to be the referees, ended up joining the game. And at the same time, government policy from the 1970s to the present encouraged them to join the game. Thomas Sowell from the Hoover Institute commented that when you strip away all the criteria, the government's concern that people have access to being able to buy homes that were of marginalized groups, when you strip away the criteria, it's not as simple a racial or cultural issue as people would think. And so I would argue what we saw last fall was a failure of both government policy and and obviously greed and mismanagement. And what's interesting, the solution has yet to really find its way to the localities yet. We have bailed out some facets of the financial system, and I say some. The secretive nature of so much of it, the rapidity of the policy, and remember, these were policies brokered by the previous administration as well as carried out by the current one. So it's, you know, in one sense, it's a pox on both your houses that we have to deal with. And I think the future has to be public-private partnership. I'm concerned that we have an overly centralized and overly federalized system when I want to restore a little more control to cities and to states than we've had in recent history.
Roland, when you think about Bayer, aspirin, I believe I read here in the recent month or so that they've made a decision to stay in the city of Berkeley. Do politics of the right and left enter into some of those big economic decisions that can affect the whole city?
I would say yes, if they're too far out to the right or to the left. Generally speaking, in the case of Bayer or in the case of other companies, it's really it tends to be very pragmatic decisions. They're business decisions. What's this going to cost me as a company? What kind of regulations am I going to have? And what happens where it gets anti-business is when some kind of extreme policy gets superimposed on that. You know, so for example, in Berkeley, there's been discussion about building a downtown hotel conference center, which is still in the works. But there was community meetings about what it should have, and it became this idealistic wish list of all kinds of things, and it became so impractical that people started, the business leadership in the city said, well, if this continues, it's never going to happen because, you know, all these idealistic things that make no economic sense in the long run, as a cumulative whole, maybe individually you could handle it, but a cumulative whole would jettison the whole project. So it's pragmatism, but you have to have pragmatism. You have to have your idealism filtered through a pragmatic screen, if you will, so that the social good can be actually implemented in ways that don't thwart economic activity.
Sure. Well, as we go into our third break, I want to again remind listeners that our listener call-in line is 1-888-463-6748. 1-888-GO-FOR-IT, and then you can learn more about our show at ourglobalhope.com. We'll be right back with Roland Peterson for more World-Changing Leadership Talk.